This is Let's Talk Big with Jane Berger and Jen Hazel. The Owens Community College Campus Read is taking place now and throughout the semester with the goal of bringing awareness of different perspectives through books. The Campus Read book is the New York Times bestseller, True Biz by Sarah Novick. True Biz is a story of sign language and lip reading, cochlear implants and civil rights, isolation and injustice, first love and loss, and above all, great persistence, daring, and joy. Now, sharing passages, topics, and events related to the book is Owens Community College Director of Library Services, Jane Berger, and Professor of English, Jen Hazel.
Sarah, as a deaf author, were there any unforeseen challenges you discovered in representing the deaf culture authentically in the book?
Oh, yes. I mean, you know, in this book, I wrote it for about 7 years.
Oh, wow.
And one of the biggest struggles that I had was how to represent ASL on paper. Because it made me so irritated. It was just such a struggle. I was trying so many different things. You know, some of them were just bad. And I started with writing the dialogue in ASL and then gloss, which is where we use English to represent ASL. And so it's like a direct translation. But the problem with that is that the grammar and the word order is typically very backwards compared to English. And so then I knew that hearing people that were reading that, and they would look at that and be like, oh, it's broken English. And I wanted to really represent that for us, you know, and for deaf people, ASL is not about having broken English. It's actually superior to English. And, you know, in many situations. So then I was like, okay, what can I do to make, you know, the ASL make sense on paper? And so then I decided I would set up this system using the space on the page. And I could see, you know, the character would have different specific positions that they were speaking from. So we'd have those set up on the left and right side of the page, like it is in the book. And that was one way that we could kind of, that's how we set up when we sign as well. So then I used RC for when we're moving our body to show that we show that shift in our body when we're trying to show two different people talking. So I used that in the story. And I was just trying to separate the difference between where I'm showing ASL and where I'm writing in English, and people were actually speaking in English versus where they were signing. And that was a big challenge. And then later, I remember that I finally saw the book, you know, and they were trying to do the editing and everything. And so then it was a whole process there. And I woke up in the middle of the night and I was like, oh my God, how are they going to make the audiobook from this? And so then I wrote an absolutely unhinged email to the editor and I was like, oh, what are we gonna do? Oh no. And I had a little bit of freak out. And they were like, okay, calm down, calm down. So I had a meeting with the audiobook team and we talked about how we could make the visual parts of the language into the audiobook and how the listener would be able to know who was signing, who was speaking, all of those things. And I have to give that team full credit because they They had no idea, and I had no idea what they were going to do. I had no ideas to give them, and they were able to come up with a way to show what we had in the book. And when they had the dialogue that was happening in ASL, I was signing so that you could have that sound underlaying the vocabulary that you were hearing. But it was really a funny conversation because the team was like, okay, so then I have this idea, and they're like, maybe we can use noises like this. They presented an idea. And then they sent me a YouTube video of a person signing. And I was looking at that and I was like what? You said, do something like this, like what? So then they were like, oh, that's right. They're making sounds when they sign. Like you can hear all of these, the pats and the clicks and the scrapes and things make a sound. And I was like, oh, okay. All right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's fine. That'll work. And then they were like, okay, do you want to come in to the studio? We'll have a private camera set up and everything. And I was like, okay, yeah, that's fine with me. And then they told me, all right, so you need to wear loud clothes. I'm like, what? So I brought, a bunch of different clothes, and I'm like, you mean like this one? Is this loud? Do you hear this one? Is this what you want? Is this loud? Yeah. But I mean, I think that, for a first time for this to happen in an audiobook, or I think that was the first time that this happened in an audiobook, and I thought it was really cool. And now I know that they're using that process in other books as well that relate to deaf characters. So that's cool.
That is
Yay,
cool.
that's
That is
very
cool.
cool.
Yeah. Love that. Well, this kind of segues a little bit. The pages in your book where you shared some historical context as related to deaf culture, as well as signing the kind of how-tos, it was very interesting and very informative. How did you decide to include these bits in the book? Never thinking how difficult it would be to translate to the audio version.
When I first wrote my first draft, I always had this picture in the book with the signs. I would have the different pictures of the signs in there because I definitely wanted to, show or represent Charlie's ASL lessons, right? So that was always the plan. It was always part of it. But then when I gave the book to my editor, my editor is brilliant, very well versed. And we've been working together. So they really knew me, knew who I was. But it was still, I got the book back with a whole bunch of question marks and things about it. And so some of them were for me, they were like really basic things just about deaf culture. And I kind of felt like a little bit frustrating. And I was like a little bit hesitant, a little bit resistant. And I was like, I don't want to have to explain everything to the hearing people, I don't want to have to stand up and preach and draw everyone out. I just want to write a fun story. And so I admit I complained a little bit, had my little temper tantrum, and then once that was over, I realized that, okay, that's true. If I want the reader to really empathize with the characters, they need to understand the context. They need to understand our history. And so I decided, okay, we are going to go ahead and take advantage of the story, the location in there, and we're going to embed some of this information, different things related to the school and whatnot. So there's some information that February has in her lesson plan, right? And And then later I added some fun wiki, some fake, excuse me, some fake wikis. And the copy editor, when they received the book, they were like, I can't find that wiki page anywhere. What are you talking about? I can't find it. So that was kind of funny. And I was like, 'cause I made it up. What do you want me to do?
That is awesome.
Sarah, what do you hope hearing readers will take away from your book?
I hope that hearing people will relate with the characters, find a connection through the and through that connection or through that understanding, they will they'll see us as people. Because it's still, not happening oftentimes today.
Crazy, crazy. What was the most emotional or meaningful chapter or scene for you to write, and why?
So there are two specific ones that I think of. One was, I'm sorry. I'm going to give a little bit of a spoiler now. So you got your spoiler warning. But there's one with the death of February's mother that when I wrote that scene, it was related to my experience with my grandmother dying. And so when I was writing that, I was actually crying myself the whole time. So that one, and then the other one was when I first started writing this book, I didn't have any kids. And now I have two. So I was pregnant while I was writing the book. And then obviously when I started writing the book, I was like, oh, Charlie's so resistant, she's such a rebel. And then I had the baby. And I was like, oh my God, we need to see Charlie's mother's perspective. So Charlie and her mom, seeing her perspective, that was the first addition that I made to the book was adding her mom's perspective because I really wanted people to understand why she made the choices she made. And, she made bad choices, but she wasn't a bad person. She was trying to do what she thought was best. And we all do that as parents.
Yeah, and the way that you write that too, Sarah, it reads as she was following the advice from the medical community, which would have been the way you described it exactly what probably would have happened. So I think that that feels very authentic in itself, and especially that moment near I guess it's kind of near the end when she is talking about how she made the choices she made and why. It's really a profound point. My students often zero in. I've taught the book for this is the third semester now with various classes, and they zero in on that point. Actually, almost every student has something in that area to say. Sarah, how do you see the future of deaf education evolving, especially in the residential settings? Sorry, not to be loaded.
Yeah, the timing is tough.
Okay, you know what? It's all heavy at this point.
Yes.
It's all loaded at this point. It's really hard to know. I mean, obviously, deaf students' rights to education are in danger right now. And the whole Department of Education is a very important part of that. And that's the way that deaf students are able to, have their rights protected. I really don't know. It's hard to know what's going to happen.
That's fair.
Part of the concern about deaf schools is the funding. Deaf schools are expensive. They're expensive to run. And families maybe don't realize that they even have an option for their students, or they don't want their kids to be separated from the family for those long periods of time. They want to be able to see them as normal, quote unquote normal. There's so many things involved. And the problem is when the deaf schools get smaller and smaller, and we have fewer of them. The kids in the deaf schools also suffer because they don't have as many resources. And, when there are more deaf students out in the mainstream, then they're suffering in a different way. They have a lack in a different way.
Right. What advice would you give to young deaf writers who want to write or tell their own stories?
Do it.
I was hoping that's what you signed.
Yes, it's exciting. It's a very exciting time, honestly, for deaf literature. And I'm saying that, we're seeing more deaf characters in movies and on TV. We're seeing more deaf books as well. But we always need more. We need to keep on growing because we can't just have one perspective, for the whole community. We need the whole spectrum.
Absolutely right. Thanks.
All right, so we have one final question for you today. Are there any authors or books that inspired you as a deaf writer?
Ooh, so for this book, the reason I started writing this book the way that I started writing it was because I read a book called it's not a deaf author, but it's called Little Fire Everywhere.
Oh,
Yes.
yes. Yeah. We had her on campus.
Yeah. And that's Celeste
Yep.
NG. Yeah, and so when I read that book, I was reading that book and I saw that first chapter and that basis. She said, it's not over, the story doesn't finish. And she said the end of the story in the first chapter. Yeah, she said that she'll tell you the end of the story in that first chapter. But then you have the whole rest of the book to understand why that ending happened. So I was like, oh, that's so cool. I was like, they'll make a reader keep caring about the story when you already know like the answer or the ending. And I was like, I wanted to try that. So then I copied that way of doing it with my book. And I completely stole the idea, I'll admit that. And that's how I had that first chapter of True Biz. And then the other book that was really important for Deaf culture is called Isley, 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 Islay. Not positive how to pronounce that, sorry. And it's a novel, and it's about a deaf society, completely deaf. And it's from the 80s. But it's a really important book because it's a deaf author. And I think it was the first time that you saw ASL represented on the pages in the book. And she used that gloss, or they used that gloss, to show ASL in writing. And it kind of forced the hearing reader to translate for themselves, to figure out, to analyze the language in order to understand. But it was really cool to read it as a deaf person because if you read the gloss in English, it can be a little bit difficult. But if you read the gloss as gloss and you imagine the signs that they're making from that gloss and kind of imagine how they would use that, it's really cool. Makes a great picture.
That's very cool. Now that makes me want to look that one up. Always an excuse to read a book.
Absolutely. Well, Sarah, we cannot thank you enough for doing this. We are very excited to see you in about 2 weeks. So thank you so much again. And yay, we
I
will
know.
see you in about 2 weeks.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm looking forward to it. And thank you, interpreter.
Bye.
Catch Let's Talk Big on Outkast OCCR, Owens Community College Radio, every Thursday at 7 a.m., 10 a.m., 7 p.m., and 10 p.m., and at various times throughout the week. Or listen anytime on the Outcom RSS feed. Visit OwensOutcom.com for the link. That's Outcom with two M's. OwensOutcom.com for Let's Talk Big.